Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:05 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 20th. Well, when we look at the S&P 500 over the last three sessions, it has opened lower and closed higher. Whereas today, what it has done is opened higher and closed lower. So when we put that together, we can see that this has been something of an odd few sessions, that this is not normal. In fact, I saw an article yesterday saying that that the last three sessions were the first time ever that the S&P 500 has done that, where it had opened lower and closed higher on three consecutive sessions. So we know that there is some uncertainty going on in the market right now. And it's not particularly surprising considering that the index is right in the region of the 2800 level, and we had two very clear downside key reversals in that from that level in February and March. And if you look at the peak that we had last week from that level on the 13th, well, it's also a key reversal, but it's very small, and the key to the key is size. And those were reasonably large key reversals, and most particularly they had downside follow through in a rather dynamic manner back in February and March, whereas we have not seen the same degree of follow through on this occasion. So what that suggests is that this is more likely to be a consolidation rather than a peak of more than short-term significance. And also, I think there is a very clear diminution of the quantity of volatility that we have in the markets. We've had some very sharp pullbacks since the January peak. And generally speaking, after that big pullback that you get, similar to what we had in January, a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, then you get a ranging phase, because it takes time to rebuild confidence. And we're still rebuilding confidence. So now the big question is whether, if this is in fact a consolidation rather than a meaningful peak around 2800, well, then the size of the reaction should be limited to something similar to what we saw in May. And if that is indeed the case, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And that would suggest that this range will be resolved on the upside. When we look at the Russell 2000, it has been the clear leader, and it is still improving upon its performance. It rallied well off its lows yesterday, and then it improved on that performance in here today to extend its advance. And this is a very clear and sustained break up out of this range that began at the end of January. So if the small caps are any guide or are a lead indicator, well, we can then I think have at least come towards the conclusion that Wall Street is going to resolve on the upside. The Nasdaq is also continuing to exhibit relative strength. Now, it wasn't quite able to hold all of its advance in here today, but it continues to hold the break above 7,000. And as long as it is doing that, then we can conclude that this is still a breakout that is capable of sustaining itself. Now, when we look at what's going on elsewhere, the FTSE 100 was up in a rather dynamic manner in early trading, but wasn't quite able to hold on to all of the advance. And when we look at that on a weekly basis, we can see that it did push onto new high ground, but it has been consolidating. And as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean during this consolidation, well, then we can continue to call it a consolidation rather than a topping phase. I do think that the much longer term chart is more instructive, and that the key level for the FTSE 100 is the 7,000 level. And when we think about it in those terms, that this market had been going sideways for the better part of 17 years, and then it broke out, and that now we're getting the first step above this long range. And what that it potentially means is that it could go on for a while longer, but that the most likely scenario is that it will be moving higher. The Japanese market was up by about 220 points in here today, 276 points, and that's a pretty emphatic bounce from above that 22,000 level. 22,000 now represents around the region of the trend mean, and This looks like a consolidation above the trend mean. As long as it's doing that, that will probably, I can't see anyone getting particularly animated on the downside. Now, the second section was also in positive territory in here today, and it is a little bit overbought in the short term, so we have had some consolidation. And if this is still a bullish environment, well, then the size of the consolidation will be smaller than what we saw in, or at least relatively similar size to what we saw in May. So there is the potential that we've seen the extent of the pullback. Well, what everyone seems to be worried about is trade fears or trade wars, but the fear is ebbing and flowing practically on a daily basis. And there is this, I think, negotiation going on about exactly what the terms of trade are likely to be. Well, the Chinese market has been pulling back in a rather dynamic manner, and it was a bit steadier in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. And so far, it doesn't look like much more than steadying. And what that suggests is that there is a short-term oversold condition, and it may get unwound, but that it has a lot of work to do if it is going to unwind the downward bias evident really over most of the year to date. The H share index in Hong Kong had pulled back in a dynamic manner yesterday. It was barely steady in here today. It really has an awful lot of work to do if it is going to renew the upward bias. And I suspect that if we do get an additional consolidation here, that it will be a short the rallies type of scenario. I think, despite the fact that people have been saying that China has got a number of policy tools at its disposal, I think the biggest of those is the currency. And while the renminbi was a little bit steadier in here today, it is now trading back above, the dollar is trading back above its trend mean. This is a larger rally by the dollar than anything we've seen in the last 18 months, and that the most likely scenario is that the Chinese will be looking towards having a weaker currency. That is one of the things that they can use to insulate their economy from tariffs. Well, if that's the case, then there's probably going to be some additional demand for safe havens with money coming out of the country, and the banking sector remains under pressure. It was in additional negative territory again in here today. And if we look at the Shanghai Property Index, well, again, that has a similar pattern to what we've seen in the A shares. Now, it has been steadying, but there is still a progression of lower rally highs. And now, the bigger question is, once we get back up towards that 7,000 level, is the market going to fail? That's, I think, an awfully big question. That if you've got banks and property underperforming, that's not good news. That if we simply apply the same rules to the Chinese market that we do to just about everything else, that when banks are underperforming, it's not good news because banks are liquidity providers, and in a bull market, bull markets thrive on liquidity. And therefore, liquidity providers should do well in a bull market. And if the financial sector is underperforming in a big way, well, we have to conclude at least that the liquidity-fueled environment is no longer as powerful as it used to be. And that is true just about everywhere, because the central bank balance sheets are deteriorating. The size of their balance sheet is going down. This is the largest reaction we have seen. It's already bigger than the pullback that was seen in 2017. And this is a meaningful event. And what it suggests is that we have now got graphic, real-time depictions of quantitative tightening. So when we think about what impact that is going to have, well, one of the most profound impacts is going to be on the bond markets. And US Treasury yields were up by about 3 basis points in here today. If we were looking for just one simple reason for why you have the very short end of the curve, excuse me, I'm not typing particularly effectively here. If, for example, we look at 3-month LIBOR and put that on a weekly basis, then that yield is up to 2.33%. Well, That's a rather big number, considering that if we look at the 2 year, then we're not talking about an awfully big difference between the price of 2 year money and 3 month money. It's only approximately 30 basis points, and that 2 year yield does not look like it is going to stop moving at 2.6% for very long. Well, when we think about it in those terms, if we're looking for a good reason why the yield curve spread is contracting, quantitative tightening has got to be at the top of that list. There is the very real prospect that with central banks taking money off the table, that it is going to put pressure on some of the most highly leveraged trading strategies and businesses. There is a great deal of corporate debt needs to be refinanced this year, next, and the year after. And higher interest rates are not great news for highly leveraged companies. Therefore, I've often said that I think that Tesla is the canary in the coal mine. It is still doing okay. It has rallied over the course of the last 3 weeks to break its progression of lower rally highs, and now we're getting some consolidation. As long as Tesla is not collapsing, then that's likely to represent a, I think, a beacon for a lot of high yield investors. Junk bond yield, our junk bond ETFs have been unwinding their oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but this, at least to me, continues to look like a rolling over pattern where we've had the breakdown and now we're getting a period of right hand extension below the top. And that suggests that the most likely scenario is that this is a sell the rallies kind of environment. So far, so good in terms of the high yield spreads. They are not rallying, they're not breaking out, which suggests that high yield, or let's just call them junk yields, are rising just as quickly as treasury yields, but not faster. Well, when liquidity starts to become less available, then those high yield spreads will break out, and then we'll know, I think, with a fairly high degree of certainty that we're looking towards trouble. But not yet. So when we think about it in those terms, then we see that we're getting relative strength in the small cap sector. The majority of stock market indices have been ranging, but China is underperforming, and that is a very clear reality. And you do have tensions rising with regard to trade, and that is something that has the potential to intensify and potentially intensify well beyond where it is right now. And there is this ongoing discussion about what is fair in terms of trade and what the relative benefits are of globalization. That we have had a period of disinflation over the course of the last 40 years, and it has been driven by technological innovation. That is something that that technology is inherently deflationary, but it's also been driven by globalization, that by exporting high-paying manufacturing jobs out of the industrial heartlands of the OECD and into the emerging markets, what has basically occurred has been a massive transfer of wealth and, in return, lower consumer prices. Well, those lower consumer prices were attained at the expense of good-paying jobs for large numbers of people, and how all those lower consumer prices were paid for was with debt. And countries like China and Japan have been buying that debt for an awfully long time already. But China, in particular, is no longer buying the debt, but they are exporting the consumer goods and expecting people to continue to buy them. It is, at least to my mind, it is a rerun of the petrodollar system, where the Saudis would sell their oil in dollars and then buy treasuries and buy pieces of military material. China did something similar. They bought US treasuries in, and in return were allowed to export and absorbed the manufacturing bases of large numbers of countries. But China now wants to break out of that system, and that is going to create some conflict. If that conflict is limited to trade wars, well, that would be wonderful. But it does have the potential to turn into a significant problem, most particularly when the total return on those bonds looks like it's rolling over. And this, to me, at least looks like a developing Type 3 top formation. So that is a potential headache. And that when we think about what the problems might be, perhaps not this year, maybe next year or the year after, well, we don't have to look particularly far to think about what might be the cause of the next recession. Well, that is going to be, I think, a question that will be explored in a lot more detail over the course of the next few years. In the meantime, the most likely scenario, I think, is that particularly the kinds of shares that are not influenced by the trade wars are probably going to be those that outperform. And we're certainly seeing that in the tech sent in the technology sector, and not least because it's a fairly large proportion of those technology companies have been precluded from competing in China. So they're unlikely to be particularly influenced by what's going on with China. That's most particularly the case with Google, and Amazon continues to surge higher. In here was up another $15 in here today. Now it is getting overbought in the short term, so we can't rule out the possibility that we're going to get another pullback. And we know that when Amazon pulls back, it tends to do so in a dynamic manner. But as long as it's holding the progression of higher reaction lows, then I think people are going to be likely to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, Brent crude was in mildly negative territory in here today, and it is continuing to hold this progression of lower rally highs. At the other extreme, West Texas Intermediate, which had pulled all the way back down towards the trend mean, was a little bit firmer. So we're starting to see that spread between the two contracts narrowing. But this continues to be a, I think, a corrective phase for oil prices, I think at least similar to what we had between the end of January and April. The upward bias remains intact from a medium-term perspective, but it's going to be increasingly more difficult for prices to be able to sustain these higher levels because such a large proportion of additional new supply becomes economic above $70. And at 66, well, we're pretty close to that level. And when we look at the contract table for WTI futures, well, going all the way out to April 2020, you can hedge to $59.58. So that's, I think, when we think about where the break evens are, there's a substantial number of reservoirs in the USA are profitable at $60 a barrel. So the USA is now the marginal producer in terms of the global market, and it is because it's independent, then it's not really subject to the kind of social pressures that you have in Saudi Arabia or indeed in Russia. Now, when we think about the other markets that have had big moves recently, well, it is interesting that we've had the corn market has pulled back really very violently, and it was well off its low in here today. This is the December future for corn, where we have had an accelerated move on the downside, and it does look like we're starting to see some of that, or at least some of that short position being unwound. Now, wheat prices pulled back much less, and they are now starting to firm once more from the region of the trend mean. We can also see that with wheat, it has had a clearer upward bias over the course of the last year or two. Soybeans, on the other hand, has been ranging in a very volatile manner below the 1,000 P level, or well, more like 1,100 P level. It has come back in a violent manner all the way back down to the lower side of its range, and it is just beginning to firm. China is a massive consumer of soybeans, and they are telling their domestic farmers to buy or to plant more of them. They're buying as much as Brazil has right now, but Brazil's crop was a couple of months ago. So, what that suggests is that Brazil's supplies are going to be pretty low in a couple of months' time, and they may be encouraged to come back into the U.S. market. So, then the potential is probably not in the front month contracts, but probably further out. And you do have a contango all the way out towards May of next year. And but then you start getting a backwardation into the further out months. So I think that the agricultural commodities are going to be volatile, and that we are going to have some very big moves, because they are where it appears that traders are playing most actively in terms of how they're arbitraging these trade war fears. Then, of course, there is the continuing drama about what's going on with Brexit. And the fact is that the pound-euro exchange rate has been very steady for much of the last few months. And what that suggests is that traders are unwilling to make big bets. But what we are starting to see now is that the housing market in the UK is starting to come, or at least the home builders are starting to come under pressure with the end of the government supports for the housing sector. So Berkeley Homes was down in a dynamic manner in here today, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. The housing builders have been some of the most impressive big rallies since the Brexit negotiations, and now we're getting increasing evidence that they're, excuse me, rolling over. So I think that is one of the clearest developments that we're getting right now. And then from a behavioral technical analysis perspective, I think Starbucks is a very interesting example right now, that because it trended so very consistently higher from 2008 until 2015, then we had a very, very large pullback with the flash crash in 2015. And then it went on to new high ground but lost momentum. And now it's been ranging for the better part of 3 years already. Well, this kind of range following, so we had the loss of consistency at the penultimate high. Then we've had this much more volatile ranging phase. The range is large, it has been going on for a long time. So we have ranging, we've got time, and we've got size. And now it is right at the lower side of this range. Well, this range has type 3 topping characteristics. You have the failed breaks on both the upside and the downside, you've got the volatile ranging, and it has been incredibly difficult to make money. So now the question is whether it is going to find support at the lower side of the range. And it is excuse me, the issue with a type 3 top is that it is prone to failed breaks. So it is going to have to break down below $50 and then sustain the move to confirm that the peak is in. But the most important point, I think, is that $60 has been an area of resistance, and that it would really need to sustain a move all the way back up above that level to really confirm that this difficult period the company has been going through is over. And so far, there's not a lot of evidence to support that. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.